there shall be signs in the sun, and in the moon, and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear, and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. One man, one microphone, one mission, one message. True News, the only newscast reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ. And now for the most powerful hour on radio, here is End Time Newsman, Rick Wiles.
This is True News, 1 hour of uncensored news, views, and commentary. Welcome to the program. I'm Rick Wiles. There were two very significant actions in Washington on Wednesday that are flashing red alert warning signs for all Bible-believing Christians currently living in the United States of America. Life in America changed today to life in Mystery Babylon, as prophesied in the Bible. First, the United States Supreme Court continued its five-decade-long judicial war against the laws of God and the Christian heritage of the United States of America. That war started in 1962 with the removal of prayer and Bible reading in public schools. The nation has slid so far down into a moral sinkhole that today the High Court gave a major victory to the homosexual rights movement. First, the court struck down part of the Defense of Marriage Act that denies paying federal government benefits to married homosexual couples in states that have legalized same-sex marriages. In a second ruling, the court paved the way for same-sex marriages to resume in California, despite the fact that the voters of that state twice voted to preserve marriage as a union between one man and one woman. The second vote in California was passage of an amendment to the state constitution, but a federal judge ruled that the constitutional amendment was unconstitutional, a sign of just how far insanity has gripped the judiciary. Well, how can a constitutional amendment be unconstitutional? And how long until the Supreme Court rules that the U.S. Constitution itself is unconstitutional? Well, El Presidente Obama said today that his revolutionary regime will not try to force churches to conduct gay marriages. I say just give him a year or two, because Chairman Obama needs time to strengthen his grip on the nation and to deepen his cultural revolution. I want to read to you one of the really most pathetic statements I read today regarding the court decision. It was issued by none other than one of the top ministers in the Southern Baptist Convention, Reverend Frank Page, president of the Southern Baptist Convention Executive Committee, said, quote, "Christians have to live in the world in which we live. We will adapt and adjust to the realities of the law change. At the same time, we will continue to preach, declare, and live the truth that our God does not get involved in swing votes and cultural change when there is a biblical principle at stake," end of quote. So this is the position of the conservative Southern Baptist Convention. We're going to adapt and adjust to the realities of the changes in the law. Will not the Church of Jesus Christ roar? Why are its preachers whimpering? The same type of timid response was displayed by New Zealand church leaders last month when the parliament of that country adopted a same-sex marriage law. Prominent New Zealand Christian leaders said the churches would have to adapt to the new reality. Same thing happened in Great Britain weeks ago when the parliament adopted a gay marriage bill. The Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, promised that the Church of England would not oppose the bill. The Archbishop said the gay marriage issue is not a faith issue, therefore the Church would not argue against it. I think it's very obvious that the problem is in the pulpits. Many devout Christian men and women eagerly desire to see a solid display of spiritual courage and fortitude from the men in the pulpits. Instead, they are given a pathetic display of timidity, compromise, and surrender to the state. The second very troubling action today in Washington was the latest vote in the Senate regarding the so-called Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill. Senators added an amendment on Wednesday that militarizes the U.S. border. The amendment was offered by Republican Senators Bob Corker and John Hoeven. The immigration bill, as you know, will legalize the millions of illegal immigrants who criminally entered the United States and stayed for years. Now, I just had an idea. I think the bill should provide cash refunds to all the legal immigrants, such as my daughter-in-law, who hired lawyers to help them through the legal immigration process. Why shouldn't they be compensated for obeying the law? I mean, the illegals are being rewarded for breaking the law. We should at least offer cash refunds to all the legal immigrants who obeyed the law. That would be fair, right? Maybe John McCain will offer that amendment. Well, this amendment adopted Wednesday will militarize the border. And Senator McCain told CNN, quote, "The legislation concerning beefed-up border security removes any validity to the argument that border security is not sufficient." I mean, this is not only sufficient, it is well oversufficient. We'll have the most militarized border since the fall of the Berlin Wall. That's why I think this amendment was very important, said Senator John McCain. And Senator McCain said that's why he and other Republicans, such as Marco Rubio, joined with the Democrats to support the amendment. Guys like Mr. McCain originally wanted 40,000 federal agents added to the border, but they compromised with the Democrats and settled for 20,000 federal agents. You know, there's nothing like bipartisan fascism. Now we will have the most militarized border since the fall of the Berlin Wall that divided East and West Germany. Doesn't Senator McCain know that the Berlin Wall was not a good thing? And why do I have this gnawing feeling in my gut that the real reason to militarize the border is not to keep the Mexicans out, but to keep the Americans in? It is looking increasingly obvious that the national security apparatus is systematically locking down the country. At some point, Americans desiring to flee the growing tyranny in the USA will not be allowed to leave, and we'll have to float on rafts to Cuba to get away from El Presidente Obama's communist revolution. Now, there's more in the immigration bill. The legislation will require full implementation of the E-Verify system that will require all employers in America to check the legal status of job applicants. The E-Verify system will be run by the Department of Fatherland Security. The bill requires full implementation of E-Verify within 4 years of passage. So that means we're looking at sometime, you know, towards the end of 2017, when it will be fully mandatory to be checked by Homeland Security before you can get a job in the USA. By the way, this provision applies to churches, too. There will be no religious exemptions. If your church wants to hire a pastor, your pastor will have to go through Homeland Security. He'll have to be checked. And that takes me to the next part. In order to be hired and to hold a job in the new fascist America, all citizens will be required to carry at all times a biometric ID card. The Department of Fatherland Security is instructed by the Senate bill to develop a new digital apparatus called a photo tool that allows employers to, quote, match the photo on a covered identity document provided to the employer to a photo maintained by a U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services database, end of quote. It includes provisions to develop fraud-resistant, tamper-resistant, wear-resistant, and identity theft-resistant Social Security cards. I don't care what they call it. It's a biometric ID card. The federal government will require every person in this country to have their faces, their fingers, and their little eyeballs scanned by Big Brother and stored in a massive government database. The Senate bill uses the word biometric 12 times. So the liberal, progressive news media out there that likes to make fun of me and say, there's no such thing in the Senate bill, well, you need to read it. Of course, nobody is reading it, right? Including the senators that are voting for it. Biometric is in the bill 12 times. Don't tell me that there's not plans for a biometric ID card. And there's a lot more, too. U.S. Customs and Border Patrol bureaucrats have plans to boost surveillance technology to erect a virtual fence. The feds already have nearly 350 remote video surveillance systems, but they're going to have a lot more under this bill. They have 15,000 sensors in the ground right now, but they're going to have a lot more sensors in the ground after this bill passes. And the feds already have nearly 1,000 thermal imaging devices to detect the movement of people along the border. But that's going to be beefed up too. And they will beef up the border with fixed towers. Think about that. Those towers. You know, guard towers, sniper towers. Think about the images of East Berlin, West Berlin, the Berlin Wall, the towers, the snipers in the towers. And let's not forget the drones. The Senate bill calls for a fleet of drones to be in the skies 24/7. Round the clock, eyes in the skies. All of it, compliments of your friendly fascist government in Washington. Now, I don't have time today to do an in-depth teaching on the subject, but I recommend you do some research on the origin and meaning of the word fascist, F-A-S-C-E-S, F-A-S-C-E-S. Fascist. A fascist is a bundle of wooden birch rods. It's an ancient Roman word. And interestingly, fascist regimes have often used the fascist as its symbol of authority. Well, there's a lot of fascist symbols in Washington and around the country associated with the U.S. government. The U.S. Senate. You know, the Senate that's passing this immigration bill that has all this Big Brother technology mandates in it. Well, the U.S. Senate seal features a pair of crossed fascies. And there's one in the White House Oval Office. The National Guard uses the fascies on the seal of the National Guard Bureau. Two fascies appear on either side of the flag of the United States behind the podium in the United States House of Representatives. There's a string of fascists around the base of the Statue of Freedom atop the U.S. Capitol building. And the Supreme Court building features a Roman centurion holding a fascist to represent order. And, of course, the U.S. Tax Court, you know, the private court of the IRS system. The U.S. Tax Court has a Roman fascist, too. And I think what's happening is that The fascist vision of the Illuminati Freemason New World Order is coming into full view. many of us have known about it for a long, long time. We've talked about it. We've read books about it. We've watched videos about it. But it's here. It's coming out. It's blooming. It's out in full view right now. It's not hiding. It's not pretending. It's right out here in your face right now. And it is the most fascist thing you'll ever see. And it's coming out and it's going to bare its teeth. And it is going to be a very, very nasty regime. And by the way, don't forget that Mr. Obama himself is a member of the Prince Hall Freemasons. Now, I mentioned earlier that many of the provisions of the immigration bill will be fully in place by the end of 2017. Let me help bring this into focus and to show you that we are right on schedule in the Illuminati plan for world domination. In 1988, I think it was the January issue, 1988, The Economist magazine, which is partially owned, controlled by the Rothschilds family, The Economist published a report about a coming world currency. The front cover depicted a phoenix bird standing in a pile of burning currencies, paper money from around the world. There's the U.S. dollar and the Japanese yen, all these currencies. It wasn't just the dollar that was on fire. It was all the currencies of the world were on fire. And that phoenix was standing there, and its feet were in this pile of burning paper money. But around the neck of the phoenix was a gold coin, a medallion. And the gold coin had a phoenix engraved in it. And there was a date engraved in the coin. The date was 2018. And when you read the Economist article, and again, I'm certain it was January 1988. The Economist article said to watch for the implosion, the destruction of paper fiat currencies, and to expect the introduction of a global currency in the year 2018. Well, we're halfway through 2013. And this fascist police state is coming into full view by 2017. I believe the money masters are practicing creative destruction. They are deliberately destroying the old system in order to create a new system. And that new system is Luciferian. We are witnessing the implosion of the paper money system. They have to set fire to the currencies of the world in order to introduce the global phoenix in 2018. And I don't know if that's what they are going to call the currency when it actually comes out. But I think you know what the phoenix represents. And so we see all of this symbolism and imagery that's been presented to us over many, many years. And it appears that we're right on schedule for the arrival of this fascist world government that is appearing. Now, is it the very end? I don't know. I don't know. You know, Hitler had a desire. Hitler had a dream of ruling the world. He thought the Third Reich would last 1,000 years. He wanted to be a millennial reign like Jesus Christ. But God didn't let him do it, did he? Now, Hitler had a short run at it. He killed a lot of people. Millions of people died because of Hitler's insanity and his demon-possessed mind. He took down a lot of people. There's a lot of death and destruction. I don't know. This next one that's rising up, is it the last one? I don't know. Could be. It could also be it's going to have a short run, going to take down a lot of people. I don't know. I just know this. It's getting very, very scary. It's getting very dark. If we look at this in our human flesh through our mind, it could be very troubling. But I need to just say to you, don't fear the evil schemes of these rulers that are seeking to impose their tyranny on the human race. I say rejoice. Jesus Christ is coming. Jesus Christ is coming someday. He will destroy these wicked regimes, and he will give to his church, the body of Christ, the entire kingdom of God. I'm Rick Wiles. You're listening to True News. We'll take a break, and I'll be back in a minute with my guest.
Reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ, you're listening to True News, the End Time Newscast. Your obedience is an indication of your love for God. Here's today's moment with Charles Stanley.
What is the one single way that you and I know that we genuinely, truly love God if we do what? Obey Him. I can give Him lip service. I can preach sermons and we can sing and read the Bible and give, but that's not an indication that I genuinely love Him. We love Him and we express that love toward Him when we obey Him. So think about this. When you live out your life on a given day and you walk obediently before God, do you know what you're doing without even knowing it? When you live obediently before Him and obey Him, what you're doing is you're loving Him. Your obedience on a daily basis is love. He challenges you, for example, to share your message with someone else, how God's worked in your life. When you do what He says, you're loving Him. When He asks you to volunteer to serve in your church or whatever it might be, and you do that, you're loving Him. When He tells you to give, you're loving Him. And so often we think, well, in order to love God, I've got to go to church and sing and pray or do something dramatic. No. He says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. If you love me, you will obey me. So that you and I can express our love to Him every single day. In fact, the truth is, how many of our decisions in a given day indicate whether we love Him or not. What I want you to see is this. Very clear in the Scripture that if I love Him, I'm going to obey Him. I'm going to do what He says, because you see, the Christian life is a life of commitment to the person of Jesus Christ, to walk in His ways, to follow Him. He said, follow me. So you have to ask yourself this question. Am I experiencing the love of God in my life? Do I feel that He loves me? Am I expressing genuine love to Almighty God by the life that I live, decisions that I make, words that I speak? Am I expressing love toward Him? And nobody knows the answer to that but you. Do you really love Him? It takes more than lip service. It takes one simple thing, to obey Him in whatever He's requiring of you.
If you're not a Christian, your obedience is not at all impressive to God. But if you accept His free gift of salvation, He welcomes you with open arms. Learn more when you click All Things Are New at intouch.org.
Welcome back to segment two of True News, your alternative source for world news, information, and inspiration. The AmericanBanker.com website said today that the era of the bank bail-in could very well be upon us. The banking news website referred to a report in the Wall Street Journal that revealed that big U.S. banks such as Wells Fargo, Citigroup, and J.P. Morgan Chase are preparing plans to submit to the Federal Reserve to deal with future bank liquidity crisis that would require emergency actions to save or shut down a failing bank. Now, bank bail-in is different from a bank bailout. A bailout involves using taxpayer money from the U.S. Treasury or another government to pay off the bank's creditors. A bail-in involves stealing all or some of the money of the depositors to pay the bank's creditors. The same type of emergency planning is underway in Europe. EU leaders are attempting to iron out differences over the cost of future bank failures. Finance ministers from 27 European nations met Wednesday after all-night negotiations in Luxembourg last weekend broke down over a French-German split on how to impose those losses. France and Germany are divided over how much control governments should have to set the rules on how much bank shareholders, bondholders, and depositors with more than 100,000 euros should be forced to share the burden of a bank failure. In a sign that the EU financial crisis is far from over, a top Italian bank has warned privately that Italy is likely to need an EU emergency bailout within 6 months as the nation slides deeper into a depression. Meanwhile, Canada's Globe and Mail said worried central bankers are scrambling to ease public fears in the wake of a harsh market reaction to their recent words and actions. The paper was referring mainly to Ben Bernanke's warning that the Federal Reserve will start to withdraw the crack needle from the U.S. economy by the end of the year. And gold continues to plunge in price. Bloomberg News said gold is heading for its worst quarterly performance since 1920, as the precious metal has lost 25% of its value since early April. So is the global financial crisis behind us, or is there another steep plunge on the economic roller coaster ahead of us? I have a member of the European Parliament on the telephone right now. Mr. Godfrey Bloom is a top lieutenant in the United Kingdom Independence Party, which is now the fourth biggest political party in the UK. In addition to his seat in the European Parliament, Mr. Bloom is the president of the European Alliance for Freedom. His official website is godfreybloommep.co.uk. Mr. Bloom, welcome to True News.
Hello to you and all your listeners, and a great pleasure to be invited on.
Yes, sir. Well, first of all, congratulations to you and Nigel Farage and the people of Great Britain who have confounded the establishment with the UKIP's stunning election victories in town council races last month. I got to tell you, I thoroughly enjoyed reading the London papers and seeing the expression of shock and dismay on the establishment faces as the little people of UK stood up and said, we don't want any more of your rule over this country. So congratulations.
Thank you very much. Yes, it's been a long, hard fight. We sort of started in the mid-90s, and we've been working enormously hard ever since. And the breakthrough came, and I think there's more to come. The European elections, which favour us for a number of reasons, but particularly the electoral system is proportional representation. So, it's one man, one vote. What you see is what you get, not the party system first by the post. So it suits us, and I think we're going to be the top party in May of next year. In fact, I bet on that some years ago, and it looks like that's going to come true.
Well, we're going to be watching it from this side of the Atlantic. I want to ask you regarding these opening news stories that I had in the introduction. Is the global economic crisis behind us, as the news media is telling us, or is there another dip ahead?
No, I'm afraid we're staring into the abyss. I sit on the Economic and Monetary Affairs Committee in the European Parliament, and one of the problems that we have is obviously it's a lay committee, as you would expect, made up of politicians from all over 27 different countries, and none of them have any serious understanding how international banking works. So they're clutching at straws. They don't understand it. And, of course, neither do our elected politicians, even very senior politicians indeed in Europe and in North America, simply don't understand what is happening. And they're bewildered, and they think that they can print money. They can print their way out of this by counterfeiting money, which, of course, is absolutely absurd. But they're still not talking about what they need to do, which, of course, is a root and branch reform of the international banking system. And until that they do that, nothing's going to get better. We've learned nothing from the 2000 and 2008 crisis. We've learned absolutely nothing. And therefore, certainly all this must happen again. And I think probably rather sooner than later.
Now, we had this report just days ago. Ambrose Evans Pritchard in the Telegraph said the second biggest bank of Italy said that there is a crisis coming within the next 6 months, that Italy will need a bailout. And then last week, a French think tank in their newsletter said that there will be another global financial crisis in the second half of 2013. Do you think are we this close to another event like the 2008 Lehman Brothers collapse?
Well, timing is, of course, a difficult thing, isn't it? We know the world's going to end one day, but we don't quite know when. We do know that there's going to be a much bigger, a much deeper collapse of the banking and currency system, but whether it's in the second half of 2013, I couldn't say, or 2014, or even 2015. Getting the timing right, but one thing we do know, it's going to happen because they have made no reform. So until they reform banking, we need to split the difference between deposit banking and investment banking. That's step one. And we must, of course, get back to hard money. We've got to get back to, in 1971, when the Bretton Woods dissolved and the United States went off the gold system, it was an open opportunity for politicians to print money, which is precisely what they did. I mean, I would argue that if you've got a little, or any of your listeners have a little machine in their attic to turn the handle, even if they knew that they had to make a Faustian pact with the devil, but it would print dollars, sooner or later, no matter how well-intentioned they are, they would use that little machine in the attic. Now, they're ordinary good people, good middle American people. They would be tempted to do it. And, of course, politicians, in the main, are all crooks and charlatans, with, of course, the noble exception of myself. And so they will continue to turn the handle and print and counterfeit money. And sooner or later, of course, people will no longer want that medium of exchange. It must eventually lead to hyperinflation. And we'll see, not just in America and Europe, but we will see the same sort of phenomenon that we saw in the Weimar Republic in Germany in the 1920s. It's as sure as eggs, but quite when, I wouldn't like to guess.
Yes, because we've never witnessed anything like this in world history. We have seen individual nations go off the deep end and print money. And as you say, they go into hyperinflation. But we've never seen multiple nations do it simultaneously. And so we really don't have, an economic textbook that we can go back to and say, look, this is what happens when groups of nations coordinate their money printing. So we're really in uncharted waters, and nobody really knows how this is going to end. We know it's not going to be a pretty ending, but we really don't know what's going to happen.
You're quite, Rick. You've put your finger right on the button. In the Weimar Republic, there were other currencies. There was the franc, which was reasonably strong. There was the pound, which was reasonably strong, and the United States dollar. You know, there were other areas of the world. Now you're quite right. What we have is central banks of all countries defrauding the currency system, the Fed, the ECB, the Bank of Japan, the Bank of China, the Bank of England is no better. And getting back to this guess on maybe an Italian bank going down in the next few months, all the banks, when you have a fractional reserve banking system, all the banks are broke. So the Santander are broke. The Royal Bank of Scotland continues to be broke. All these banks are broken because of the fractional reserve system. And, of course, with Basel III, and we've had Basel I, Basel II, we've had banking regulation, and all they're doing is arguing about whether the reserves should be 10% or 11% or 9%. And, of course, we know that with fractional reserve banking, even if we went to a 10% reserve, a 10% reserve would still give us a bank which was 90% broke. Of course, interest rates are at zero. Unemployment is rampant in Europe because of this. These diverse economies crammed into one currency. So it's already falling apart. And, of course, in the Iberian Peninsula and Greece, you're talking about 50% youth unemployment. No society is sustainable when 50% of your young people are out of work. It just isn't sustainable. So we're going to see, and of course the Mediterranean countries, are very volatile. And if you look at their histories, if you look at the terror, the French Revolution, if you look at Italy, it was a relatively new country, only relatively recently united in historical terms. Civil war in Spain, of course, in living memory, or just about living memory. A fascist regime was there. And, of course, what will happen in chaos, what happens whenever you get an economy in chaos, people turn to an authoritarian, totalitarian regime. So they won't turn to libertarianism, which is what you and I would wish, and to go back to hard money. They will turn, and you will find a fascist or neo-fascist or statist system comes in its place. Sure as eggs.
Last year, there was a report out of Switzerland that the Swiss army was preparing for European social unrest or even war on the continent. In your position in the European Parliament, have you heard any additional information about the Swiss preparation?
Nothing substantive has come across my desk. But, of course, there were riots in Frankfurt 2 weeks ago, which is interesting. And if you want to see the riots in Madrid and Rome and Frankfurt, you can't find it on European or British television. You have to look at Russia Today, of all things. So this has been hushed up. Most people in these countries, most people don't know there were riots in Frankfurt. Most people don't know there were riots in Madrid and Rome. It's being kept from the people because they're afraid that when people see what's happening, they too will take to the streets. And I can't see any way out of this because this is a political ideal. The euro was a political currency. Nobody wants it. It has no democratic mandate. The French voted against the new constitution. The British haven't been given a referendum, which is why UKIP is doing so well in the polls, because people are saying, just a minute, give us a say. And ordinary people, middle America, middle Germany, you know, middle Spain, middle France, middle England, people are saying, you know, we can't go on like this, but the political class, the elite, are just, I would argue, just like the aristocracy of the old French during the Revolution, who ended up all getting their heads chopped off. And I can tell you, I made it one of my speeches. I said, sooner or later in the Parliament, they will storm this building, and they will hang us, and they will be justified.
You know, on the subject of heads being chopped off, and you mentioned earlier about news being blacked out in the UK of the riots. One of the biggest stories in your country in recent months, the decapitation of the British soldier walking down the street. Mr. Bloom, that story was totally blacked out in the United States. Very few Americans know that it ever happened. That's the type of censorship that's in this country. We don't, without, other than outlets like True News, most news organizations in the United States never said a word about it.
This is so depressing. I visit America frequently, and I've got so many American friends. And, of course, my party is broadly Atlanticist. You know, we almost share our common language, and we share, our people share the same ideals. The sad thing is our politicians have let us down. We've been betrayed by our political class, both in America and the United Kingdom. These people live, they don't mix, they don't go to the pub, they don't go to the cricket club, your people don't go to minor league baseball anymore. You know, the problem, except at election time. So these people don't live in the same world as the rest of us. They're completely detached. They have guaranteed salaries, guaranteed pensions, index-linked. And in the European Union, the bureaucracy don't pay income tax. So their salaries are tax-free. So the bureaucracy and the vote for bigger spending, higher government spending, but they're not part of that. They're out of that. Their pensions are non-contributory. So we have this political elite in Europe, and I would argue too. I don't know America quite so well. I'm a guest there.
You just described Washington.
Yeah, I think I probably have.
There's a total disconnect between the reality of the middle class in America and the freak show that's in Washington. There's no
Absolutely.
Connection between the two.
And, of course, it's the poor old middle America, middle again. We're the people who create the money that they steal. You know, if we didn't get out of bed and work hard, there wouldn't be any money for them to steal. And they go on stealing it to give to their lobby groups and their friends and their buddies. I mean, we're now £1 trillion in debt, which for a small economy like ours is enormous. We are... in a situation where we are nearly 200% of GDP in our debt ratios, which is the same as Greece, and nobody's talking about that in England. There's a news blackout on that. But we're still giving away 0.9% of GDP in overseas aid. So here we are with a Chancellor of the Exchequer in England saying he doesn't expect the country economy, the United Kingdom economy, to grow but much more than 1% for the entire 2014. And he says in the same breath he's going to give that away. He's going to give that away. For what? For Pakistan to buy F-18s? For African dictators to buy apartments in Paris? Ray-Ban sunglasses? Mercedes-Benz? What kind of nonsense is all this?
Is socialism failing right before our eyes? Are we the generation that is going to see the total failure of socialism?
Well, again, I think the problem is water doesn't flow uphill. You can't buck the market. And what we have experienced in Europe, and I sadly see the United States going the same way, is the concept of welfarism, something for nothing. And people now, it's generally speaking, people better off at the lower end of the scale are better off by not working. They're better off on social security. So if you have two or three children, you're encouraged to breed and you are encouraged not to work. And so you have increasing unemployment. And, of course, this is what people now think. We now have a third generation, post-war generation. I'm a baby boomer. I'm 63. But we have now a generation that's grown up who believe they are entitled. It is their God-given right to be given free money by the state. And nobody associates tax or borrowing with the state. It's not just politicians who are disconnected. People don't associate how they vote in the ballot box with how they're treated by politicians. Otherwise, nobody would vote for these scumbags, would they?
That's right. Well, the reason I'm asking about the collapse of socialism, the great Margaret Thatcher said many years ago that the problem with socialism is that eventually they run out of other people's money
to spend.
Well, they've run out of other people's money now. They're flat broke.
So they're flat broke and they're printing.
So they're printing and so they're trying to extend the life of the socialist regime, but at some point that too will collapse. And the point I'm making is what you said earlier, it will be replaced by a total fascist dictatorship.
I can't see any other way out because I can't believe that a broken economy with all the implications that has would sit down rationally like you and me and probably most of your listeners and say what we should do. We need to roll back the state. We need small government low regulation, low taxation. I think what will happen is that you'll have the same sort of phoenix-like rise from the ashes that we saw in the 1930s in Germany. And I think that's the sort of regime that you're going to see. And I think that... And talking about gold, you were talking about gold earlier, I've been looking at that very carefully myself. But, of course, what we're actually seeing is paper gold fall by 25%. Now, I don't believe with these ETFs and these paper gold certificates that the gold actually exists.
Neither do I.
It's being shorted. It's being shorted by the banks with the encouragement of central banks, because as soon as people wake up and realize they have to kill the idea of gold, why would you hold paper money, dollars, which are being counterfeited, or pounds or euros, which you know are being counterfeited, when you could hold gold? So this is a federal back, in my view. This is backed by the Fed, the central bankers across Western Europe, to destroy the idea of trying to get, to try and stop people returning to the gold standard in their everyday transactions. And you saw, of course, in Arizona just a few weeks ago where they were going to take away the tax on silver coinage, and that was vetoed by, of all people, a Republican governor. Because I think the debt now of the malaise of central government, which I would argue started in your civil war, that everything was run by Washington, and people have got to stand up. Your people have got to stand up to Washington in the same way that we're trying to stand up to our government. But, of course, you've got the same problem in America. You vote Republican or Democrat. There's no other game in town, and that's the problem we've had for 15 years. People have voted Labour or they voted Conservative. They've voted red or they voted blue. And, of course, again, I would suspect it's probably the same in America. People are disengaging. Nearly 50% of people in the United Kingdom just don't bother to vote at all.
I'm almost at the point I don't blame them because it seems like voting only encourages them.
I think that's right. And of course, there is a school of thought. I think it was von Mises' school of thought who reckons, don't vote.
Yes.
Let nobody vote because we all know it doesn't make any difference. And maybe they think they've got some sort of democratic mandate, but these people are so detached and so intellectually stymied, these people, that they wouldn't notice if nobody turned out to vote for them. They'd just carry on before. I mean, we've got a prime minister who, when he was on American television last year, he didn't know when America came into the Second World War. He couldn't translate Magna Carta. We are breeding politicians who possibly are the most ill-educated politicians in our country's history. Is it possible to breed men who don't know the first thing about their own country's history? And I think we have.
And that reminds me of when President Bush was in office. It was his press secretary, Dana Perino, and she was asked a question that, in regards to President Putin, made a remark about a second Cuban missile crisis. And they asked the White House press secretary what the president thought about that remark. And she said, I don't know what Mr. Putin was talking about. What is the Cuban Missile Crisis?
I mean, it's heartbreaking. But these are the people who seem to have got themselves into power. I mean, I do a lot of lecturing on the circuit as a professional economist or financial strategist. And if you go, say, to Warsaw, if you go to the Warsaw School of Economics, you will have youngsters there who can talk to you about any aspect of economics, any school of economics in some depth. And they can also talk to you about the Napoleonic Wars in the peninsula. You know, these are very rounded youngsters. I'm very sorry to say in the Anglosphere these days, they can barely grunt across the table at you. I mean, they're utterly hopeless. I mean, I wouldn't employ a state-educated economist. If somebody came into my office when I was director of an investment bank and they said, I graduated in economics at Edinburgh University, I certainly wouldn't employ them. I didn't have time to untrain them from their Keynesian nonsense.
It seems to me, after 15 years in this job on the radio, Mr. Bloom, that we're fighting the same regime. They are united across the Atlantic. There is a hidden octopus that is directing the affairs of Western nations and collapsing national sovereignty and destroying the cultural heritage of the nations and introducing multiculturalism and doing all kinds of things to just completely transform these nations. It's happening in the UK. It's happening here. It's happening in Holland. Are we talking about the Bilderberg boys? Who is behind this movement?
Well, that's an interesting one. It's basically, isn't it, it's a choice between the conspiracy theory and the cock-up theory. It's a difficult one, and it depends what day you ask me. Sometimes I believe it has to be a conspiracy. And other days I think, no, when I meet them or I meet them in conference or I realize just how stupid these people are. They're not, most of them, clever enough to put any form of conspiracy together. So I think probably it just seems to be a course of events which is taking place because people are not properly educated. They don't understand the concept of law. I mean, to give you an example, and your legal system is very similar to ours, we believe in the presumption of innocence, trial by jury, the concept of habeas corpus. All these things are fundamental pillars of law, and they're gradually being abandoned. But, of course, if you don't teach children in schools about what their rights and responsibilities are, if you don't talk to them about their history, it's very easy to take something away from them. And if people don't understand the concept of habeas corpus and the presumption of innocence, if they don't understand that, it's very easy to take that away from them. It's easy to steal something from somebody when they didn't know they had it to start with, and I believe that that's the problem. And we get things in the United Kingdom called the Enabling Act. We have regulating enforcement agencies who work completely outside the concept of English law. There are over 100 different agencies in the United Kingdom who have right of entry into your house. And you'll know the famous saying, an Englishman's home is his castle. That's gone. The presumption of innocence has gone. You have to prove that you're innocent. I mean, it's a complete nightmare. And once you move away from your legal base, once you move away from your constitution, and what a tragedy it is in America, because I think you've got a fine constitution. I think it's a splendid document, which was designed by men to save us, or to save America, from the very people that are now crucifying America, and it, because they've moved away from their constitution. And of course, what a lot of people don't even realize in England is that we have a Bill of Rights. 1688, we have an Act of Settlement. Some of the wording from your constitution comes, as you know, from the British Bill of Rights. But people don't think we have a written constitution. Well, we don't in exactly the same way as the United States of America, but we do have a lot of stuff which is written down, the Queen's Coronation Oath, all these things are very tightly written and were very carefully written in the late 17th century by us. So, you know, if people aren't taught that in schools, it's easy for people to tear that constitution up. How many young American kids today, if, let's say, you know, teenagers, really could have an intelligent conversation with me about their own constitution, and I'm a foreigner?
You couldn't have an intelligent conversation with most politicians, school teachers, or college professors. They don't know.
No.
They don't know. They really don't know. They have no idea. The only thing people know today is what was on television. That's about it. That is their concept of reality. I know I need to let you go here very soon. I did want to ask you, the recent weeks, we have these bombshell explosive revelations about the NSA vast domestic spying operation here in the USA. And then it was revealed that your country's GCHQ is far surpassing everybody else, and they have taken the King of the Hill title, and they are intercepting 600 million telephone calls per day worldwide with intercept devices on 200 fiber optic cables and undersea cables and everything. What are your thoughts about this official awareness, things that we have known, suspected for quite some time? What's your thoughts about this massive surveillance?
I think when you have what is a centralist and statist type of government, and that's evolved since the war, wars are very bad things. You know, we had the Great War, we had the Second World War, and that's when governments take away your freedoms for your own good. And now this happens to be terrorism. They talk about, oh, we're taking away these things, we're spying on you for your own good. It's now that is a conspiracy. And of course, if you employ lots of people to be spies, you know, we mustn't be surprised when they spy, because that's what they do. The CIA, you know, are all paid salaries in order to spy on people. And of course, they have to invent the next bogeyman. Now the Soviet Union's collapsed, they're looking around for another bogeyman. And it's the same in the United Kingdom. This war on terror is simply a way of taking away the remaining civil rights that we have. I just think we sooner or later we need to stand up to it. And I think we're a new party. We're a new party, UKIP, in the United Kingdom. I honestly believe that there needs to be a new political party in the United States, and I would argue that the good title for it would be the Constitutionalist Party, which would just reinstate your original constitution.
There actually is a constitution party in the United States.
Is there?
It's on ballots in 39 states.
We are.
But it doesn't get a lot of, obviously it gets no attention in the media. They have fielded candidates every 4 years. But there is a constitution party, but it really needs money and support and credibility, but it does exist.
If they keep working, my advice to them is to keep working, keep at it, because we had 15 years of this, and suddenly you break through one day. And you will break through. They will break through. Stick to their guns. Keep doing it. It may be not next year. It may not be in 5 years. But only a new party, I think, can rescue America. And they sound to me like they're the right people for it.
And if you are someday the Chancellor of the Exchequer, I hope you'll come back on the program.
I would be delighted to do so, and my very best wishes to all my friends in America and potential friends. We love our trips out there.
All right. My guest today, Mr. Godfrey Bloom, member of the European Parliament, representing a district in Great Britain. Thank you, Mr. Bloom. Appreciate you taking time.
Thank you so much.
Reporting the countdown to the second coming of Jesus Christ, this is True News.
This is Max McLean. How does receiving Christ's Spirit change our inner being? Listen to the Bible from 2 Timothy 1. For God did not give us a spirit of timidity, but a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. So do not be ashamed to testify about our Lord, or ashamed of me, his prisoner. But join with me in suffering for the gospel by the power of God, who has saved us and called us to a holy life, not because of anything we have done, but because of his own purpose and grace. This grace was given us in Christ Jesus before the beginning of time. From 2 Timothy chapter 1. Listen to the Bible. It's great for the soul.
Make listening to the Word part of your daily devotions. To find out more, go to radiobible.org.
Well, before closing, I want to deliver a message to the Illuminati, Freemason, fascists who are dreaming of ruling the world. The message comes from the 40th chapter of Isaiah's book in the Holy Bible. He said, "Have you not known? Have you not heard? Has it not been told you from the beginning? Have you not understood from the foundations of the earth? It is he who sits above the circle of the earth, and its inhabitants are like grasshoppers, who stretches out the heavens like a curtain and spreads them out like a tent to dwell in. He brings the princes to nothing. He makes the judges of the earth useless. Scarcely shall they be planted. Scarcely shall they be sown. Scarcely shall their stock take root in the earth, when he will also blow on them, and they will wither, and the whirlwind will take them away like stubble." I am so glad that I serve the one true God. Yahweh is his name, and his only begotten Son is Yeshua, the Lord Jesus Christ. His Son will return to earth victoriously and rule forever in righteousness. The world may be turning away from the one true God, but I will forever praise him and bless his holy name. Psalm 104, "Bless the Lord, O my soul. O Lord, my God, you are very great. You are clothed with honor and majesty, who cover yourself with light as with a garment, who stretch out the heavens like a curtain. He lays the beams of his upper chambers in the waters, who makes the clouds his chariots, who walks on the wings of the wind."